This is Gorse Culture Podcast, the HR detective agency where we solve one piece of the people puzzle at a time. Helping you crack the HR code, here's Joe Gorse.
Hello and welcome to Gorse Culture Podcast, where we unravel people puzzle for business leaders, line managers and HR professionals. Each week I invite an industry expert to join me. We'll feature a new case study, examine the facts and tap into specialist expert knowledge, and together we'll find actionable insights and solutions. Now, before we investigate today's case study, I want to take a moment to welcome today's guest, Ramiz Kaleem. It's really lovely that you're here today.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for inviting me onto the podcast. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
As have I. Do you want to take a moment and introduce yourself and what led you onto your journey? So you've got a lot of involvement in HR, pay and reward. So just tell us a little bit about yourself.
My background has always been reward. I started off in consultancy and I worked initially looking at global mobility. Then I moved to Towers Watson, where I looked at more broader reward. And then I moved in-house to look at pay and reward for specific organizations. And I did that for a few years, different companies. And it was really around 6 years ago that I just felt that our approach to pay wasn't always fair. And it certainly wasn't transparent in most organizations. So I really wanted to have a more transparent approach to pay, encourage that in organizations. And that's why I set up 3R Strategy. And that's our focus, is how do we get organizations to be more transparent in how they manage pay and communicate clearly and honestly to their employees.
I came across you because I found your book, A Case of the Mondays, which really, it helped me understand pay and reward in a much clearer way than I understood it before. And you reference so many different resources as well. And on your website, you've got an enormous amount of resources there. And there's also, please correct my terminology, but there's also, is it an academy that you have as well?
It is. And the reason I wrote the book is because when I started my reward career, I looked at the different options available to me to learn more about pay and reward. And you have the CIPD, which is more generalist HR. They do cover pay and reward, but what they cover is very basic. And I started to look at or research books that I could read. And again, it's very limited in terms of what you can find. And the books that are available tend to be very academic. So I just wanted to write something that was more accessible. It was more relatable. And, you know, anyone could just pick up that book and not think, oh, this is very technical. Just really relate to it. That's why I have like film references, for example, just to make it a slightly lighter topic, because it's not just, yeah, you know, the target is HR professionals, because this is something that we deal with every day. But all of us, we get paid as part of our jobs. And I think it's for people to really understand how pay works so that they can challenge some of the decisions that they can, that impact them in the workplace.
And you narrate it yourself on Audible, don't you?
I did. It was 2 days in the studio, and you don't realize how difficult it is just to read out loud until you have somebody in your ear like listening to every single word that you're saying.
I think on the outside you think it's so simple, don't you?
You do. But, yeah.
So 2 days you were reading the book that you wrote from start to finish.
Yes. It was, yeah, it's 2 days. I think with a lot of these things, you know, when I was writing the book, I'd never written a book before. So actually, I started my journey by, I first read 2 books on how to write a book. and so I'm slightly obsessed with always learning new things. And so yeah, again, with all of this, it's, I do like trying new things and challenging myself. So yeah, it was an interesting experience, but one that I really enjoyed.
So let's get to the people puzzle. We've got a puzzle to get through today. I'm going to read it out. So, dear Gorse Culture Podcast, I'm a small company founder with just over 100 employees. I outsource most of my HR admin, but I like to develop the major processes that affect my company and the people within it. Every March, I issue a pay rise for the coming year and give a Christmas bonus based on overall productivity and profit, no matter what the job role is. Recently, this has been identified negatively in meetings with my senior team. What I thought of as fair is seen by some of my workforce as disproportionate to the level of work that everyone contributes. My view has always been that everyone plays a part in the service we provide for our customers and should receive the same bonus and percentage uplift. This is something I've been very transparent about. Was I wrong to do this? Is there a fairer way to reward and recognise my workforce without causing tension? Should I reward different amounts based on individual performance, and should that reward be kept private and personal within their PDR? Any advice or guidance would be gratefully accepted from a HR enthusiast. I think this founder seems to really value their people. They spend a lot more time than I would have expected for an owner of a company to be as involved in the day-to-day operations. So considering that each employee would be paid a different salary, do you think it's fair, first of all, that they receive the same annual bonus if it's based on productivity and profit?
It's a complicated issue because we need to know a little bit more. But I would say there are two main things here. One is the idea around fairness. There's a lot of research that's been done around pay, academic research. And that academic research tells us that fairness and perception of fairness in particular is more important than what we pay people. So if you're giving everyone a 3% pay increase, if people perceive that process to be unfair, then whether you give them 3% or 10% or 20%, they're not going to be happy because the perception of fairness is that this is not how it should work. I would say that's the first thing. And if you think about that perspective, I think it's less about a pay issue, and this is more of a performance management and a process issue. Because whether you pay everyone 3%, some people might think this is unfair because I've contributed more than everyone else, and why am I getting the same? And if you decide to distinguish between the increases and give one person 10%, another person 2%, then again, some people could feel this is unfair because they're thinking, why is that person getting more than I am? So I think that issue here is around perception of fairness rather than what you're paying people. The important thing is, how do you create that trust with your employees to say, this process is fair? And I think that comes with having not what a lot of organizations do is an annual process where you have a meeting once a year saying, this is what I've decided, you're all getting the same, or I've decided that you get more than this person. It's you need to have an ongoing conversation with everyone in the team. So the example, which, you know, I know you said you've looked at the book, the example that I like to use is about sports and around footballers, for example, mm-hmm. where the pay is really transparent. You can see what everyone's earning, and you can have people within the same team, like Ronaldo, getting paid 500,000 compared to another striker doing the same job on 100,000. What's the justification? And the justification is that very clear indicators of this player scoring more goals, having more assists, you know, or more passes, all of these performance indicators. And so you mentioned PDR in that question. So that's the performance development review. So how are you managing your performance review? Are you setting objectives once a year? And I would say this is where we need to have more regular conversations. So I can give you an example in what we do in our organization. And because we have a rule to say anything we say to our clients, we have to do ourselves. And
okay.
That is that we set objectives on a quarterly basis. Then we have weekly one-to-ones, and we look at progress after every 30 days. So 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and that's your quarter. And then at the end of the quarter, you see how you do in that quarter and how what we plan for the next quarter. And then again, go through that cycle with weekly catch-ups. And also what we do is everyone sets their objectives. And in a team meeting, we all share our objective to say, this is what I plan to do in this quarter. And that way there's accountability and there's sharing of information. And so when it comes to the end of the year, nothing is a surprise and we can see what everyone's contributing. And so I think this is a case of having a good performance process, performance management or contribution process. We don't even like the term performance management, so we call it enabling mm-hmm. excellence. Because it's about enabling our employees to achieve excellence rather than saying we want to manage poor performance. That's the key here, not actually what we pay. And then once you get that right, whether you want to pay everyone 3% or you want to differentiate, I think becomes less relevant because people feel that the process is fair because you're being transparent about how it's done.
I love this enabling excellence. I think it's brilliant because it also points to the fact that you need to support your staff to be able to achieve those objectives, whether it's on a quarterly, biannually or annually basis. You need to make sure that they've got the right tools, the right equipment, the right knowledge and skill set to be able to achieve those objectives. And I guess it's about what you're saying, it's about their contribution towards the organisation. And Ronaldo's contribution to the football team is much higher than the other player. But what can be put in place for that other football player for him to achieve the same kind of level of excellence as Ronaldo and achieve that pay level and also achieve that, I suppose, the fame and that goes with footballers these days? What does that look like? So you talk about this quarterly objectives. So it's quite short term, isn't it? Do you have those aligned with long term business plans and then chop them into shorter bits? So could that football player, for example, have a long term goal, no pun intended, to achieve the same level as Ronaldo does?
So we definitely do have longer term business objectives. So, you know, I have objectives of what we want to do as a business, and that then gets broken down into, okay, what do we need to do in this quarter? And then what do I need to do in the first 30 days and so on. Mm-hmm. So that is how it works. But I think in the example of those two players, it isn't possible for that person to achieve the same level of success in 99% of the cases as Ronaldo or Messi, because they're exceptional. And I know mm-hmm. those are extreme cases and you don't really have that differential in the workplace. So you have to make a decision to say, if there is a slight differential in your people, do you want it to be reflected in pay? Or do you want to treat everyone the same? And it comes down to starting with your pay philosophy. So what is your pay philosophy? And for example, our pay philosophy is that we feel that everyone contributes towards our success. And that success is demonstrated through our profits, and we share in those profits together. And so we have a profit share scheme rather than saying this person gets a higher bonus as opposed to somebody else getting a lower. So that's our philosophy. If our philosophy was that it's going to be based around performance, then we would need to clearly demonstrate through our objective setting on a quarterly basis how one person has overachieved compared to somebody else. So I think it's starting off with saying to this business owner, what is your philosophy? What do you value? And if you do value that everyone should get the same, then you need to have a strong performance management process, because if people are feeling that this is not fair, then they're feeling that some people are not contributing as much as everyone else. And that's something that you should address rather than saying, I need to change how I pay people.
And I think that's it, isn't it? That's part of that problem. So they're mentioning that this transparency of giving everybody the same bonus and giving everybody the same percentage uplift has then contributed towards this tension and this negativity. But are you saying that that's because they haven't got their pay philosophy pinned down and they haven't really talked about how they're going to move forward with a reward strategy?
I don't think the issue is a result of transparency, because we have to recognise that a lot of people are talking about pay in the workplace. So if they decide that they may not tell everyone that everyone's going to get paid the same, let's say 30-40% of employees talk about pay at work to their colleagues, mm-hmm. they're going to find out. And I feel with lack of transparency, they would probably be even more resentful to say, you know, nobody told us this, we found out. And so I think the transparency actually helps, because they may think it's unfair, but at least you're being honest with them. So I don't think transparency is the issue. The issue here is they're obviously going in with the best of intentions around treating people fairly. But it's around the process, because people need to trust that the process is working well. And so I would start off by, yes, it sounds like their philosophy is they want to treat everyone the same and reward everyone the same. Now let's have a process in place to make sure that people are all contributing equally. Though obviously everyone's not exactly the same, there might be some differences, but there's a minimum standard that we all need to achieve. And I think that's the real issue here, is making sure that the process works so people trust it. And the second issue here is around, we often can assume that equal outcomes are fair. And this is, you know, saying everyone gets the same. And it's the issue with when we think everyone should get an inflationary pay increase, for example. And the unions always argue for this, and they say this is a fair outcome because everyone gets the same. But what if one person is 20% below their market rate and then the second person is 30% above the market rate or where they should be? Why are we giving everyone the same inflationary increase? Because we're just maintaining that inequity. So yeah. I don't think we should be careful about the mindset that equality of outcome is fair and is the right thing to do. We need to dig deeper and figure out whether there should be equality of outcome, because if inequities exist, then equal outcomes are not helping that inequity.
I read recently that there was an American female footballer who has been, for the past, I think, 5 or 6 years, she's been campaigning against whoever the governing body is for football, well, soccer in America, whoever this governing body is, for equal pay as male football players. So this female footballer, she was successful. She's achieved recognition that because their football team is successful and they're achieving the same, sometimes better results than the men's soccer team, that they've received that back pay for those female football players for the past 5 years. So there's a big disparity there, isn't there, with gender, but also with ethnicities. So BAME colleagues are often in lower paid jobs as well. How do we achieve that equity there as a fair process for contribution? Because I think those female soccer players in America, the reason they won their claim was because they were able to prove that they were giving the same contribution or more as the male soccer players.
So I think sports can be very different to the workplace. So the US player I think you're referring to is the captain of the US team. I think her name is Rafinha. They're arguing that the US women's team gets paid a lot less than the men's team, whereas actually the women's team is probably more popular in the US because women's football is quite popular. They won the last two World Cups, for example. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to international federations, you know, they're not profit-making organizations. Their objective is advancement of the sport. And so there's a strong case there that both men and women should be paid the same. Obviously, the money aspect comes into it. And I think that's where, if you start to look at the club level, you know, it's a slightly different issue, because if you've got one set of sport bringing in 70,000 fans with the revenue that brings, and another bringing 2,000 fans and the revenue that brings, you can't really have the pay equity. So I think in the workplace, it's slightly different, because what we can have is a very fair and a consistent process, which, to break it down simply, is just two steps. It's to say, let's look at what is the level of skills and responsibilities that we need to carry out this role in our organization. And based on that, what is the salary range that we're willing to offer? So let's say you are looking to recruit a finance analyst, and you say the salary range that we're willing to offer for this role is 40 to 50,000. That's step one. And regardless of your pay philosophy, whether you want to pay the market median, upper lower quartile, whether you want to compare against the media sector, high tech, that's your pay philosophy. You decide the role, look at the skills, and you set the salary range. Step two of the process is you look at the individual in the role and assess, based on their knowledge, their experience, and what they're likely to contribute, whether they should be at 40,000. 45,000 or 50,000 within that pay range. And that is a process that will be applied to people regardless of their gender or their background, and without asking the question, what is your current salary, or what are your salary expectations?
Horrible because question.
It is. And I mean, it's interesting, because we were just having a discussion with somebody on, like, one of the recruiters on LinkedIn, who's just trying to make an argument about not publishing pay ranges and asking these questions, because I think if going back to your question around different, you know, BAME employees or women who might, those with disabilities who might have been underpaid or discriminated against in their current role, what we're doing is we're transferring that inequity from one organization to another. Mm-hmm. So it's in an organizational setting, I think it's about having those two steps: evaluate the job, set the pay range. Step two, look at the individual, decide where they sit within that pay range, and everything else needs to be ignored because what people have earned in the past is irrelevant.
Yeah.
People's salaries, expectations are irrelevant because our expectations are based around our experiences. And if we have negative experiences, we'll have lower expectations. So I always think, you know, it's like going into a shop and not having any price tags. And the shop owner says, well, what are you willing to pay for this? I mean, mm-hmm. it seems like a ridiculous scenario, but that's what happens in the workplace all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a cafe in Harrogate, and it's a social cafe, and they cook meals. So I think it's just twice a month they cook these meals, open to anybody to go in, and you pay what you think the price should be for that, or you pay what you can afford for that. And I think it's a great concept, but it's not something that you see all the time. But going back to what you were saying there and about setting the salary range, I think it's really important, and you cover this quite a lot in your book, A Case of the Mondays. You can get salary ranges from all different kinds of sources. So a very basic, cheap or free way is to have a look at other job adverts that are out there, all the way up to buying some information. But again, it's the level of information you buy. So if this founder of this organization thinks that they want to have a look at the salary ranges, or any other listeners, what's the best way? What advice would you give them when they're looking at a salary survey?
There are two main types of surveys and data available. One is crowdsourced. And these are websites like Glassdoor, Indeed, Total Jobs, where you go in and you put a job title and it gives you a set of ranges or salaries. There are limitations with this because in the vast majority of cases, this is based on job titles. And we mm-hmm. know that job titles mean different things in different organizations. Sometimes job titles mean different things within the same organization. And so job titles can be misleading. The second limitation with this data is that it's based on advertised salaries. And we know that a lot of organizations advertise salaries, but the actual salary that you offer can be anywhere within that range, sometimes even outside of that range. The second set of data is the formal surveys that are run by some large consultancies. And this is where organizations give their data and they participate in a survey and pay for it. And this is what I would recommend every organization and this founder to do, is to participate in one of these surveys and get good data. Because this is now based not on job titles, but it's based on the content of the role. So you could have a finance analyst, which we're recruiting for, which is equivalent to a senior finance analyst in another organization, but they have the same level of responsibility and skills. And this is also based on actual salary data, what people are earning. And employees and managers will come to HR and say, I want a pay rise. In the past, they would just come to HR, but now they don't just come to you. They do their homework. And so they go mm-hmm. online, they look at this research and they say, I found this data. And if as an HR person, all you have access to is this online data, all you are saying is to the employee, my research is better than your research. And so we're going with my number, not your number. And what they should be doing is saying, we participate in a survey. We get this data, this robust data, which includes these organizations. And this is what we use for benchmarking. And this is how we make our pay decisions. And so that's what we should be doing as HR and organizations, is getting good data so that we can challenge some of the online data that gets given to us. In some cases, it might be right. In other cases mm-hmm. where it doesn't feel right, we actually have data that we can challenge with, rather than just a conversation of, you know, my research is better.
Yeah. With the information from that salary survey, you don't have to go with the highest range from that, do you? You can go in the lower quartile, the median, or the upper quartile, depending on what you want your package to look like for your staff. But it puts you in a better position to understand where you are placed within that market. I guess it's understanding who your peers are as well. So the information you can get from that, if you've got a high turnover and you pay for a salary survey, it may show you why you're actually losing, you've got a high turnover of staff, because they could be going to a competitor who is in that upper quartile.
Exactly. And like you said, you know, that survey and that data isn't for us to make formulaic decisions to say, you know, you can have leaders saying, oh, my employee is on 38,000, the data saying 39,200. I need to get them to this. That's not how it works. It's just about us getting data so we can make more informed decisions. And it might be that you look at the range, for example, from lower quartile to upper quartile, and somebody that's just been promoted in your organization, you might think, oh, they're at the lower quartile. And somebody else who's highly technical, highly knowledgeable, that's coaching and mentoring people within the team, that you might think, oh, they should be nearer the upper quartile. And so, like, exactly that. You look at the data, you look at the ranges to then make more informed decisions around where different people sit within your organization.
I'm wondering if this founder, he says that it has over 100 employees and he's got a senior management team. So he's got that hierarchy in place to be able to look at what that reward package might look like, to look at what the pay and bonus structure might look like across all job roles. What about other types of organisations? So I was listening to a podcast. It's called We Not Me. And the hosts are Dan and Pia, and they have a company called Squadify. I'm not sure if you've come across them. They had somebody on their podcast who has a marketing company, and he decided, had this epiphany, and he decided that he was going to give all his profits to charities, educational charities in the UK and abroad. And that's what he started doing. And then a couple of years ago, he brought in a consultant, and with that consultant, they flattened the organisation and created a self-management process. And with that self-management process, it's kind of made everybody accountable for everything that they need to do. But the problem I see with that is, where's the growth? Where's the motivation? How can you then look at pay and reward to support and to increase that motivation for that longevity of that staff member and stop them from, I suppose, getting static and looking elsewhere? How would that look for a flat organisation?
When you say self-management, what do you know what exactly...
It's a democracy. So everybody would, a problem would be brought to the table and everybody would discuss it. The founder wouldn't be the person who said, okay, this is what we're going to do. Each person would have a task that they would do. They would be accountable for it. There would be no, oh, this is what I've done. Ramiz, please could you check it and let me know I'm on the right track? There would be that autonomous discussion, but they would keep ownership of that. So although the founder will have that overall responsibility for the organisation and the direction that it's going in, everybody has that same level of input and decision-making to be able to then push forward with what they need to do. And because they give 100% of profits, they can't do what you do and have any equity or profit sharing. So what's a different way to look at reward within that kind of organisation?
Let's take that example of 100% profits being shared with charity. You can have an organisation that might say, we're going to pay the CEO a salary of 100,000. They're going to be on a bonus of 100%. And we're going to pay the management team bonuses of 50% each. And what's left over, 100%, goes to charity. Or you can have another organization that says, oh, you know, the CEO is taking a salary of 50,000 and everyone else is on 30,000 and we're going to spend a percentage of that bonus to charity. The rest is going to be invested into the company. So I think we need to really dig a bit deeper around some of these things. And what is the structure, the reward framework of that organization. Mm-hmm. And if you have a reward framework where there are large bonuses and there are large salaries, then profit becomes less important because actually everyone's being rewarded really well anyway. And if you make a lot of profits, yes, you might donate them. And then next year you might think we're going to bump up everyone's salaries because we can afford it now. So there are different ways of managing it, because I would prefer the approach, obviously, that we have, which is around focusing on profit and profit share, because our objective is all around growth. Mm-hmm. And it's encouraging everyone, and it's saying, you know, we're not giving people a bonus, because when you think about bonus, there are two main objectives. So opposite ends of the spectrum. One side, you're saying we want to either drive individual performance. So if you do well, you perform well, you get a bonus. The opposite end of that is saying we want you to share in our success. So if we do well, then everyone shares in that success equally. It comes back to your philosophy. What is our philosophy? And it might be that for this company, they're focusing on individual performance. So you perform well, you get paid a good salary, you get paid a good bonus. And then if there's a profit, then that goes out to charity. But I prefer the collective success thing, where it's more around driving growth. So they're two different ways of looking at how you reward people.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really interesting. So are there any nuggets of information that you'd like to share to this founder to support him in solving this puzzle that we haven't discussed?
I would say a lot of this comes down to communication. So when I was saying earlier, the research says perception of fairness is more important than what we pay people. So you could have a fair process, but if people perceive the process to be unfair, it's not going to work. And there was a recent research that was published by this company called Josh Bersin, which is a Deloitte company. And they found that well-communicated pay equity is 13 times more important than higher levels of pay when it comes to retaining and engaging our employees. So this founder might say, I'm doing this because I want to treat people fairly. But I wonder if they communicated this to everyone to say, this is why I've done this, because I want everyone to be treated fairly. So I would start off by saying, what is your philosophy? Do you want to treat everyone the same? Or do you want to distinguish based on how people are contributing? And make sure you communicate that to your employees. So that's the first thing I would say. And then the second thing is, this is your why. And I don't know if you know Simon Sinek, who always talks about starting with why. I think, you know, it's a very strong psychological concept of starting with why, and how starting with why builds trust with people. And pay isn't any different. So when we talk to our employees, our people about pay, we should start with why. Why do we manage pay the way we do? And then once you have this and you've communicated this, then make sure that how you do this is fair and is consistent. So how you do this is either you give everyone the same, or you just differentiate, is to make sure that your performance process or your enabling excellence process is working, and that people are setting objectives regularly. They're sharing their objectives with each other in the team so they can help and support each other. And at the end of the year, when we share our outcomes, you can clearly see what everyone's contributed. And then the outcome should be perceived to be fair, because this isn't something you've just given out to people. You communicate on a regular basis.
I think you've just summed that up beautifully, summed the conversation up absolutely beautifully. And I think the only thing that I would add to that is for people to read your book. It's called A Case of the Mondays, just in case you missed that. And also to have a look at your website, because it's just packed with resources for people to look through and understand everything a bit more. There's case studies on there, white papers, blogs, podcast episodes, which number two is my favourite one so far, and there's also workshops. That nicely brings us to an end of a great episode. I've really enjoyed our conversation today, Ramiz. Thank you so much for joining us and being an exceptional guest and sharing your wisdom and expertise.
Thanks a lot, Joe. I really enjoyed being on the podcast, and yeah, I hope people find this useful.
thank you so much for listening today. Join me next week for another episode of Gorse Culture Podcast, the HR Detective Agency, where the people puzzle meets its match.
That was Gorse Culture Podcast. If you find the conversation interesting, please follow or subscribe on your podcast app. For show notes, resources, and to see more about the contributors, visit gorseculturepod.com. That's gorseculturepod.com.